I mean, an addiction starts with the relief that you receive from the high. But with drugs like opiates, there are also other drugs that cause a severe come down. But opiates specifically cause a physical come down outside of just the mental come down that you experience. Fever, cold chills, you can have vomiting. So fentanyl does that 1,000 times more than any other drug.
Welcome back to Mike Up in Your Business. Actually, today we do a deep dive into something that you don't normally hear. And this is into, we're discussing addiction and recovering from addiction, particularly with what's going on. So Jay Cabolonaise, as you were researching this out, I love what you did. You found multiple angles to what's going on with the COVID pandemic and how it's affecting people and how, unfortunately, it's spawning a higher degree of addiction. Well, Zach Amet joins us. He is a recovering addict, and he shares his story on what he's going through, but I think we'll also give you perspectives of how others can navigate the challenges associated with COVID. So listen on in. Zach, I mean, we're literally just meeting for the first, well, now it's a few minutes of weird connections over the web. So it's a heavy question to ask, but I want to know about your story with addiction. And what I'm trying to get to is how this relates to the COVID pandemic and what's happening with the populace as a whole.
Totally. Yeah. As an addict myself, I have experienced the need for connection. In my addiction, most of my addiction was marked by the needing a sense of belonging to some sort of group, even to my family. Being an adopted kid, I had this idea that maybe I don't fit somehow. Also in my recovery, I need deep, meaningful connections to other people in order to not experience the stress that causes me to self-medicate. Now that we've all been kind of forced to isolate, fatal drug overdoses are on the rise. Addiction is on the rise. People who experience mental health issues, they are turning to self-medication.
Yeah, I know. I see that. And it seems to be rampant. I'm curious, when we were first connected, you were sharing a little bit about your biological family and shared that they also experience addiction. Going through this, is your experience that addiction is a genetic or biological thing, or is it nurture? Is it a blend?
It's parts of many things. There is genetic predispositions that play a role in addiction. There's traumas that you experience as a young child that can cause addiction. There's environmental, like how you were raised, where you live can have an impact on addiction as well. So yeah, for me, all those things came together and caused my addiction.
And give me some context. What were the substances you were addicted to?
So it started off with alcohol. As a youngster, I picked up alcohol as a 13-year-old, and it progressed as drugs were easier to access than alcohol for me in the LA area, right?
Yeah. Is that why it progressed? Would you feel is this the ease of access? Or is it because you get a different sensation from it? Like, what's the primary driver?
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole idea of gateway drugs. I do believe that one can lead to the other. But I mean, just with experimentation, you start to realize what does give a more effective high, what can take the burden off your back a little bit better, what feels better. And you get more addicted to each increasing substance.
And did you have an addiction to fentanyl or fentanyl?
No, that is a new one. Fentanyl is a monster.
So I'm hearing.
Yes.
So what's the intention of fentanyl?
So fentanyl is an opioid that is more powerful. So the dose of fentanyl can give you a high, a small dose can give you a high 1,000 times more than a heroin. The come down is more severe. So you need to get more quicker in order to get better. Fentanyl is also that much more deadly because it takes such a small amount to cause a overdose and a fatal drug overdose.
And so people with addiction to fentanyl and other drugs, you were talking about the down is super hard. Is
is the whole goal, the goal is probably not the right choice of words, but you, people keep on going up because the pain of the down?
Sure. I mean, an addiction starts with the relief that you receive from the high. But with drugs like opiates, there are also other drugs that cause a severe come down. But opiates specifically cause a physical come down outside of just the mental come down that you experience. Fever, cold chills, you can have vomiting. So fentanyl does that 1,000 times more than any other drug.
I gotcha. Okay. So just to kind of put a little closure to this component of your story, I'm just curious, how did you overcome your addiction? And I don't, you still called yourself an addict, so I don't know what the term is.
Addict in recovery.
Addict in recovery. Okay.
Yeah.
How did you get to addict in recovery? How did you overcome that?
Sure. I had police intervention. I got arrested in college. I had a lot of alcohol, had taken some sleeping meds, and was very disruptive on campus. Police intervened. I went to jail. I realized that this is not the way I can keep living. I'm going to lose the fundamental parts of me,
yeah,
past the point of no return. Because of that, I sought treatment. I went to two primary treatment centers at the time, and also that I did treatment along with 12-step meetings.
Okay.
And those two together were essential to my healing of my physical life, my mental life, social life. There were tons of components that were very important to my recovery.
So the 12-step program, is that I've heard the term regularly, is that a community of a support community? What is that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, what was vital in 12-step communities was what they call the fellowship.
Okay.
Fellowship is the activities that you do outside of the actual AA or NA meeting. They're the trips that you take together. They're the dinners that you go to after meetings. They're the people that you call multiple times a day and offer support and receive support.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So now fast forward to, you know, 2020 hits, there's this pandemic going on. There's people, taking drugs, alcohol. What do you think from your own experience and maybe your observations, what are the triggers or causes for this mass kind of, populace incline in addiction?
Sure. So like I said, for me, the opposite of my addiction is connection. When we were asked to go in our homes and no longer interact with the people that we receive sense of belonging with, that causes stress on our brain and stress on our recoveries. And how addicts know how to relieve the stress is using drugs or alcohol. So, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So, but this is causing stress that is the most foreign, I think, to so many people. There's stress, loss of jobs. This is the stuff that I'm experiencing and hearing. So loss of jobs, loss of connection to family. I mean, physical contact is out the window. Loss of, I don't even know the word is travel or whatever, but you know, people are now quarantined, locked in their home, which has become a cell.
Mm-hmm.
All those things seem like loss that there is no solution for that. So how, if someone's in that circumstance, how do you find outlets in this new reality without reverting to self-medication?
I can speak to those who do struggle with addiction or mental health. When you're at home or you're experiencing loss of connection with other people, the first thing you need to do is reach out to loved ones and say, I am struggling. I know that for me and my addiction, I didn't really know who to trust or who loved me. It was all very complicated, but
is there a fear of judgment?
Totally. Fear of judgment, history with the people in our lives. We've screwed with our friends and family. So we don't really know if there are resentments or what's going on there,
sure.
But I would reach out and say that you're struggling. Also 12-step meetings have moved to, like everything else has, to Zoom. You can experience a 12-step meeting for the first time from the comfort of your home, or potentially from the cell that we have experienced recently.
Yeah.
But also therapeutic services, clinical services have moved to telehealth. That's a positive that's come out of this time, is that funding for telehealth and access to telehealth has incredibly increased. So you can see a therapist from your home.
How does someone know they're actually having a problem?
Well, I mean, the signs are many. If you're struggling at work, I mean, definitely the things that have been affected by COVID. If you're struggling at work, in your relationships, those are indications that you may be having a problem.
Well, how about if I'm having a problem with addiction? Like, I presume many folks get into denial, right?
Of course.
I presume. Do you feel you were in denial yourself until the police got you at the campus?
Yeah, it took me a while to understand that I couldn't take in any substance into my body. I thought if I stay away from the drugs and just do the alcohol, I should be fine. I should be like a normal person. They call it doing research. In AA, they call the different experimentations, like drinking after 6 p.m. only, or only on the weekends. It took me a while to do that experimenting, to really understand that the consequences of my use, no matter what the substance is, fully outweighs continuing to live life that way. Yeah,
I get it. But I'm just wondering, because many people drink socially, but don't have an addiction.
Sure.
I wonder if there's a way to self-diagnose. I wonder, I'm just presupposing, but
sure.
Some people are going through this COVID crisis and they're drinking more, but they don't qualify themselves as having an addiction, and other people have gone too far. I'm wondering if there's a line that delineates that you have an addiction versus your social life.
You know, I think addiction oftentimes is self-diagnosed, and that is the tricky part of the question. I would say to look at those like three things: how your relationships are, how work life is, how family life is. If you're suffering, I mean, that's what the DSM states in an addiction, is you need to really look at what in your life is suffering.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, it's self-diagnosed.
It's self-diagnosed. I got you. But it seems like there's clear external indicators that this is a cause of serious problems, almost like a waterfall effect. It kind of triggers down.
Sure. And oftentimes there is a mental health issue underlying an addiction. So,
okay. Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. And so do you feel that what we're going through with COVID is exacerbating people's underlying mental health issues? Or is it triggering new mental health issues? I'm just curious on your opinion. I know you're not, you know.
Sure. No.
Analyzing the research.
I think that people who have previously struggled with depression, for example, are going to be experiencing more heightened depression during this time. People who have experienced just mental health issues without an addiction may now be experiencing some qualities of addiction in terms of the self-medicating.
How can we, you, myself, others, help people that are going through this? If we see someone is going down a path that doesn't look good, how can we be of service to that person?
Well, like I said, for someone who is struggling to reach out, I think it is vastly important if you have a loved one who is struggling or you perceive as struggling, to reach out to them and say, hey, I'm here for you. You can talk to me. I see that you may be struggling, and I'm 100% here, and continue to check up on the person. It's also important to be ready for if this person reaches out to you, to have the tools to offer them the support, whether it's to get them into treatment, to set them up with a telehealth appointment with a therapist. You want to have your kind of arsenal behind you so that you're armed with the information to get this person healthy and happy.
You started by saying, you know, when you reach out to someone, say you may have an issue. Is it dangerous to say you clearly have an issue? Like, there's a problem here. Does that become confrontational?
Language is very important.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just like a good therapist can walk somebody into really having their own understanding of themselves. You don't want to tell somebody that they are struggling. You want to help them see for themselves.
And what if someone's on the brink? What if someone's gone so far that they're in states like you experienced with the police? Should that loved one call the police? Maybe there's no right protocol, but is there some direction you can give on that?
Sure. You can have a wellness check. Here in California, they do wellness checks. It's nearly impossible to get the police involved in kind of a 51-50 situation where the person's legal rights are handed over to the police. It would be wonderful in some cases to get somebody actually ordered to stay in a treatment facility, but adults are legally allowed to make their own decisions for themselves. But if you are scared that a loved one may be in jeopardy in their homes, you can do a wellness check on them.
If you don't mind, would you share, I know you recently lost your husband, and it's, would you mind sharing a little bit about what that experience was like?
Sure. Actually, it's on the topic of fentanyl. We were expecting our son, and Justin wanted to deal with a slip disc that he had in his back before the birth of our son. He went into a surgery having 5 years sober himself, and set up the protocols that they talk about in recovery. You tell your doctor that you have an addiction, you set up a pain management protocol that is careful in terms of addiction. He was given oxycodone to manage the pain after the surgery. And that caused him, that they say the beast is awoken when you put the substance that you're sober from back into your body. And within a day of the surgery, he had purchased oxycodone off the street, which was laced with fentanyl, and that caused his overdose.
How quickly did that happen after his surgery?
24 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So addiction can return at extraordinary speed.
Sure. And yeah, they talk about surgery and pain management protocols as a real slippery slope. I can say in my experience with Justin, it was.
Yeah.
He was so, he had so much to lose and had so much to live for, and had a pretty fantastic recovery. But once the drugs were entered into his system, once again, he really didn't have any defenses against his use.
Yeah. Do you feel that with this pandemic, the access to drugs with fentanyl and these other types of drugs, these opioids, has it become more rampant? Is it more available? Is there better control? What's your sense?
Sure. Earlier on, when they closed the ports, it was a hopeful moment that maybe they could reduce fentanyl coming from China to the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And it did for a bit. But now that the ports are open and the various underground routes are open again, there is access to drugs. I don't know if it's increased, but there definitely is access. And it's scary because, you know, fatal drug overdoses with opiates, for example, are on the rise because oftentimes people can use opiates in pairs. But if you're using opiates alone, you know, opiates reduce your respiration to the point where an overdose can be fatal. We have a drug that reverses an overdose called naloxone or Narcan over the counter that can reverse an overdose. But if someone is not there to administer the drug or to call the paramedics to do CPR, get your heart starting again, the overdose can be fatal. So physically, it's important to to be around people as well, more than just the connection and the stress relief that comes from being in conjunction with other people.
Is there things we can do to protect ourselves and our loved ones proactively, particularly in these circumstances, to make sure that we don't get exposed to this or experience it or experiment with it?
Sure. I'll actually answer that question speaking about fentanyl again.
Yeah.
Fentanyl has in large numbers started to be cut into drugs that people use, like party drugs, like cocaine, MDMA, because drug dealers have caught on to the fact that we can now physically addict their buyers to an opiate. So we need to be aware that you think you're just using a party drug, but you're also getting addicted to an opiate at the same time.
It's unbelievable. So it's a pure money ploy by a dealer because they have a built-in buyer then.
Sure. Yes. It's very sinister.
Oh my God. It's unbelievable. So your son, did you end up adopting your son or what happened?
Yeah, our son was born through surrogacy.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's your son. Yeah. I'm sorry. So he's born. What happened?
He's incredible. Yeah. I haven't told many people, but we had DNA tests done because Justin and I both put an embryo into the surrogate and we had no idea which embryo won out.
Yeah.
It is actually Justin's genetically Justin's baby, which
is fantastic.
Totally magical for us.
That's fantastic. How old is your son now?
He's 10 months old.
Oh, my God. So you're doing parental duties probably 24/7 now.
It is really crazy. It's crazy. I have been grateful for the connections that I get to have with my family during COVID. It has brought my family closer. So has bringing a new life into the world. I get to see my parents on a daily basis, and they are so happy with me as a father. So,
can imagine.
It's been a really challenging, but also a really wonderful year for us.
Yeah, I can't think of a better spot to end it on such a great up note. Zach, thank you so much for sharing honestly your story. I'm sure it's not easy to do, but I think it's what our community, our world needs to hear. To protect ourselves and protect others and loved ones. And thank you for being of service by sharing this.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It was fun being here.
What a story, right? And what a shame that COVID has triggered, in my opinion, this foundational loss, which is connection.
Yeah.
And what I heard again and again as he was talking is that addiction, while there is an addiction to the drug itself, alcohol, whatever the other drug is, there's a trigger behind that. And it seems to inevitably be relationship-based, lonely-based, self-worthiness. There seems to be some inherent trauma that seems to trigger addiction.
Yeah. It's like isolation seems to like come down to this, you know, the final sand in the glass is people think they're alone and it keeps pointing up. And we've had a few podcasts like this lately, like have we not, where we're talking about peer-to-peer groups and peer support and it just keeps coming back to this belief as to whether or not we belong and feeling a part of something and feeling community. And it's amazing how important that is. And I'm not sure that we all really recognize that. We're talking about it now, which is phenomenal, but it's kind of odd that we don't really have a better understanding of how essential it is for good health, for good mental health.
There was a video I saw of, they had like a millennial and it was a guy and he has an apartment. And what they did is an experiment. They took his cell phone, all social media, no internet, and said, just be in your apartment for the next 7 days. So it was a 1 week experiment and he was provided food and stuff like this, and books or whatever he wanted to read, but there was no internet connection, no contact either. You can't call anybody. And you just see this guy, he's like, he's going crazy without the connection to other people. They come out, the closing scene, he walks out of the apartment. They said, open that door or whatever, the next door. He opens up, and it's an elderly guy by himself. And like, this is what this guy's life is like.
Oh, no, wow. Connection.
And talks about, yeah, it talks about the isolation and loneliness. My own parents are going through it. You know, my father's homebound and my mother's caring for him. And she is in a heightened anxiety state. I mean, she's always been an anxious person, but the highest level I've ever seen. Yeah. And it's this isolation.
Yeah.
So I can see how this can revert to trying to medicate it.
Yeah, know? Absolutely. It's a painful state to live in. Yeah. And I wonder what the questions, I wonder what we need to question about that situation. What is it that we're thinking and feeling and believing about being isolated that gets us to the point where we need to medicate, that it becomes so painful that we medicate? Yeah. And that was powerful, Mike, that they showed him this elderly man. Oh. I mean, that's heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking.
There's so many like that.
So many people that are lonely. And then now COVID is amplified. And now the younger generations are affected by that lack of mobility.
Yeah.
You know what I thought also was fascinating and so sad was that fentanyl.
Yes. The fact that it turned his recovered husband back into a user who was getting his drugs from off the street within 24 hours. That was mind blowing. I had no idea that, you know, that transition seems okay. Yeah, that's likely. You have a surgery, you're back on pain meds. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
But to think that could happen that quickly, it's completely eye opening and mind bending for me.
Have either of you ever taken medical opioids?
Yes, I have. And I don't like them at all. But thankfully, I think that's a good thing. I didn't like the way I was depressed on them and things like that. So, I could see if you're in a lot of pain,
pain goes away, or does it get rid of the pain, or is it kind of blur the pain? How's that work?
It deadens the pain, but it deadens you too. For me, that was my experience of it.
Yeah.
But, I can see that it is like, I don't even know how to describe it, coming off of them again and trying to get yourself out of a mire of drugs. And there was a point where I was like on a shit ton of drugs.
Yeah.
To get yourself out of it, it's the heaviest weight on your back to just take the next step and take the next step and take the next step. And eventually you feel like your lighter self again. But for the time that you're trying not to take it anymore, it's, I can't even explain. It's like walking through mud up to your neck. It's
really,
yeah.
Does it seem like it's just easier to just take the drug?
It's just easier to take the drug. It's just so much easier to stay in a kind of a purgatory of nothingness than not take the drug because you sink and then you got to walk back up. It's horrible. Well, that was my experience of it.
Do the doctors, do they prepare you and say, listen, this is going to be difficult? It's just like,
I think about that now and I'm just like, nope.
That's
not been my experience, even as a young person and now as an older person experiencing medical conditions at both ages that required me to be on those. Nobody walked me through it. I had my husband for the older one, which is like incredible. He's very healthy mindset. So there's an incredible amount of strength and coaching that was able, I think, was a big help for me. But but it is, it's an internal game for sure. It's all on you to actually do it. So
I have a lot of things about this that really hit home. The loneliness thing, I went through a really dark period where I was extremely lonely and I felt it like deep.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've learned over like the last 5 years of my life that I really appreciate is I don't think you're ever going to fully embrace that if you ever get put in that situation, because humans weren't made to be isolated like that. Mm-hmm. But I think you can sit with it and learn to be more okay with it in a lot of ways. And when people do all the self-medication, I think the saddest thing about it is they're doing it to dumb the pain, But then they, like you said, Amy, it dumbs everything. So they don't even feel the good stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think that's the, like, that's what life is like those, you have to have the lows so that the highs are, or you feel the highs and you know what the highs are.
Right.
And yeah. you don't feel anything. And it's just like this baseline numbness. Like you can't even experience
right
good things. And yeah, you might be mitigating the bad and not feeling super horrible, but you're not really living. You're not.
No, it's a trap either way, it feels like.
Yeah. And the fentanyl thing, I didn't realize how bad this was. I know somebody personally who went to a rehab center, not for for that, but they told me that the cases that were coming in, it was unbelievable how many people, because they're just putting it in everything because it's so cheap, 10 times stronger than heroin.
They have a guaranteed customer.
Yeah, that's
it's so diabolical.
Evil.
It's so diabolical. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I guess, I mean, listen, if you're dealing drugs,
you're
actively breaking the law and you know it. Your circumstances may require you to survive. You have to do stuff like this, but then you're doing something that you know is harming other people, right? So you're doing something for your own survival that it immediately puts other people at risk to die.
Right.
And then you intentionally hook them, which is, you know,
that's just the diabolical part.
I mean, I don't know. I don't understand the circumstances. I guess if you walk up a mile in someone else's shoes, you could see how they could find some way to justify that. Yeah. I just cannot fathom it.
Yeah.
I cannot fathom it.
I know.
I mean, the libertarian side of me says that almost everything should be legalized, because what happens is all these black markets are created, mm-hmm. and you're not going to stop people. Like, if the war on drugs has proved anything, you're not going to stop people. If they want to do drugs, they're going to do drugs. So at least you can make it safer, so that if they're going to take a drug, it's 100% just that drug only. And the problem is then you get into like the government with their hand in the cookie jar and all this regulation and stuff. And it's like, but I think, I mean, consenting adults, if people want to do something, if you tell them, oh, you can't do that, then it's going to be like, no.
Well, I think a good example is moonshine, right? So moonshine versus liquor at the store. Moonshine used to be, it was unregulated and, you know, you would go blind or it could kill you. Then with the regulations, at least the health standards were there. And now you have a choice. You can still get, you know, the illegal moonshine stuff. But at least there's a safe outlet for that drug of alcohol.
You know, the moonshine and liquor stores is not the moonshine you get down in Virginia though, right? They call it moonshine.
That's a joke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Marketing thing. Oh, I had moonshine once in Ireland, almost one sip. And I was like, I've never tasted something so hard.
Oh.
We were driving from the Cliffs of Moher to Canterbury, which I think is on the West Coast. I don't know my geography that well. And we stopped at some kind of side thing. And there was a guy there and he was just selling some trinkets and stuff. We were on a tour guide. The guy, he comes to me, he goes, he's got more than just trinkets. If he goes, you like a little bit of Jesus juice or whatever he called it. So I'm like, okay, all right, I'll buy a little. And he had a little vial of it. So I brought
an authentic Irish experience. Yeah. You got to try
one sip. I was like, oh my God. Oh,
take your throat out, basically burn out the inside of you.
There's a guy. When I did the bourbon trail in Kentucky, there was a guy I was talking to at the distillery. And I said, you know, what about like the moonshiners around here and stuff? And he goes, it's good for two things, cleaning out car engines and getting you. Yeah, that sounds about right. Like, it's like, you know, Everclear, like it's just the strongest, harshest. Oh, yeah. It's got brutal. Fascinating though, how they do that.
Well, we'd love to hear what you thought about this episode. What did you learn? And if you have a personal story that you want to share, I'd love to hear it. Send it to askmike@mikemcallowitz.com. That's also the outlet for me to answer questions and Jacob Bolognese and I to discuss it together. But we'd love to hear your thoughts on this story too. And I'd like to ask that you rate us and review it. So go to rateourpodcast.com and put your comments about this episode. All right, Cablone, you got a little... Little gaming,
a little trivia.
You have to be really careful. What was the subject for this one?
Yeah. This one is, so when Zach originally went to school, when he said he was in a space that where he was doing really well, he lived in Utah. And my aunt lives in Utah, and Utah is gorgeous. Utah trivia.
Okay. Love it.
Okay. Question one. How many national parks are in Utah? Is it 3, 4, or 5? This is the one thing that the West has that we don't have on the East Coast. They have so many more national parks.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, the quality of the parks are just remarkable. Yeah, because the terrain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The train.
The terrain. Terrain. Oh, I, but you know what also is amazing is
we need Maine, a national
park. One of the overlooked kind of states for outdoor beauty is Maine.
Oh, Maine is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Maine is just phenomenal.
That, what's the big park up there?
Olympia's in Washington.
Arcadia. Yeah.
But my husband will insist it's Arcadia, and he says Arcadia every single time. And I say, no, it's not Arcadia. It's Arcadia.
But I say Arcadia. Your husband's pretty smart, Alec.
Really quick, funny story. The first time I went up to Arcadia, I fell in love. It's unbelievable. Like, you have to go. And it's on Mount Desert Island, and it's like a horseshoe shape. And I didn't realize that you could drive to the top of one of the highest summits. And so we decided we were going to hike. And it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. And then we get to the top and I see the road and I see cars going by. And I was like, what the hell is this? And my friend was with, she goes, oh, we could have just driven up. You didn't know that? And I was like, no, why didn't you tell me that?
That's funny.
I didn't know this was an option.
When you hike, it was, you have different trails that are, they're labeled, you know, on the tier of how difficult they are. And this was like cliffs, like sheer cliffs, like straight down on this thing.
I just go now and presume that there are roads everywhere. I just know my family's not going to ever let me take a car anywhere. We have to freaking hike every single mountaintop.
Yeah. Is it just your husband or your kid, your two sons?
It's my husband, my sons, and my brother-in-law, and my sister-in-law.
They're all jacked like that.
They're all marathoners and like extreme sports type.
Well, maybe you could add to it and say, listen, we got to turn up the heat a little bit more. You guys carry me on your shoulders. We're going to, like, I'm riding.
That's it. Yeah. Oh, that is the next challenge. You guys, I know you think you guys are really fit and you're really, you know, tough.
Yeah, but are you?
Not really. You've never carried me up to the top of the mountain. Exactly. I'm like, that is why you're the boss. You're brilliant.
That's just shit. That is raw genius.
It is raw genius.
And you could totally play into it because you can say, like, back in Roman days, they would carry the queen or whatever. Like,
and really, if you're not doing that, are you even climbing the mountain?
Well, you got to stroke the ego part and say, you guys were really tough. You would do what the SEALs do. And then they're like, oh, yeah, what's that? And you're like, well, you carry me on your back.
Yeah, that's
exactly. Exactly.
That's it. You guys are brilliant. I love you for that.
You're welcome.
Love you for it.
All right. Question two. What is the highest point in Utah? Is it Canyon Peak, King's Peak, or Heaven's Peak?
Oh, those are all good peak names. And what about Sneak a Peek? You forgot to mention that one. that's one of those joints you pull off the highway. Come to Sneak a Peek, a gentleman's club.
Yeah, in Utah.
Where there's never been a gentleman in his life. Utah Gentleman's Club.
Like, it's like the most tame gentleman ever.
Yeah. It's just a gentleman on stage going, would anyone like a drink or a cigar? Actually, we don't do cigars or drinks. I'm sorry.
Walking around offering you tea and scones.
Anyone want a scone?
Actually, they can't drink tea, so there's no tea. So there you go. Mormons don't drink tea.
Water. Would anyone like a glass of water? Welcome to Sneak a Peeks.
The largest percentage of Mormons are located in Utah. What percentage of the population do they make up? Of the total Utahan population. I think it's Utahan. 53%, 67%, or 74%?
Okay.
All right. You guys ready for the answers?
Ready. Yeah.
All right. How many national parks are in Utah?
I put 4.
There's 5.
Oh, man.
Zion, Bryce Canyon, Arches, Capitol Reef, and Canyonlands.
Damn.
There's also several national monuments, as well as 2 national recreation areas and a national historic site.
Sheesh, wow. Louise.
I've been to Zion, I've been to Bryce, and they're amazing.
It's funny that we call Maine vacation land. It sounds like Utah should be vacation land for all of those parks and monuments.
That's a good point.
And, you know,
Mike, which park has the arch?
Arches.
In where?
In Utah.
Wow. I am really, that was horrible.
It's fine.
And the funny thing is, I was stumped too. I was like, I have no idea. I think it's Zion. I really do.
I was thinking it was Zion. That's what I thought.
Yeah. I was stumped.
All right. Next one. Which is the highest point in Utah?
King's Peak.
Oh, I'm so torn.
Heaven's Gate.
I'm saying Canyon.
It is King's Peak.
Damn.
Oh, I got one. Finally.
It's 13,528 feet.
Kings, right?
Kings.
Is there a Heavens and Canyon, or did they just, were those made up?
I just made those.
Oh, up.
Nicely done, Jeremy.
Well done.
Good makeup.
I just thought of names of peaks, you know. The largest percentage of Mormons are located in Utah. What percentage of the population do they make up?
I put 63.
I
whatever,
said 67. 60.
Yeah.
67.
67. Whatever. 61.
Both got it right. It's
67. Wow.
Wow.
That's
right.
Mike won that one, though. He got 2 out of 3 on that.
Finally. Aim. Long time.
Or the number of the population. 2,650,000.
Wow. Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah.
It's interesting how religious sects move to different areas that they get a foothold and grow. Yeah. So, Mormon, Brigham Young, right? Wasn't that Brigham Young?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And you hear of these different communities that establish. And the funny thing is, I wonder what differentiates a clan or a, what's the negative term for a assembly of a group?
A cult.
Yeah. Some of them are seen as cults when they don't expand, but some of them expand. And to me, then it's a religious movement. It's not a cult. And I know cult has a negative connotation. And I'm not suggesting by any stretch of imagination that Mormons is a cult, but right. I've seen these different little startups that are cult like, and then they expand and they get a foothold and it becomes a movement.
Yeah. Kaboom.
You know, I think the difference between a cult is a cult actively discourages you seeking information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Very controlled.
In the Pennsylvania area, I mean, where you are in western Jersey, there is a big Amish community.
Well, not in Jersey, but in
Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same thing. I shouldn't say same thing, but the experience is the same, is that there's a community assembles in a certain area and it keeps on scaling out.
Mm-hmm.
I bought my shed from Amish Mike's, just so everyone.
That is a beautiful shed, Mike.
Thank you.
Was that pad in place already, or did you put the pad in place to put the shed there?
Oh, no, I installed, I had a guy install a foundation.
Okay.
Gravel foundation, and then we went to Amish Mike's to get it.
I love
that. You bought some stuff from Amish Mike's, right?
No, I went shopping there. I wanted to get, they look like pool pavilions. I wanted a shed that was sort of like a bar area. You know, they have those that are kind of cabana-like.
Yes.
And I thought that would be a nice addition to the backyard. We decided not to do it, but I really love their stuff.
Oh, reconsider it.
I know. Are you going to turn that into a bar? Are you going to use it as a shed?
A little piece of me is like, oh, this might be a new bar, but we already have a bar. So.
You have a lower backyard that really needs something like that. For
another bar.
Yeah. So that's the shed. That makes sense. It's in the driveway. Yeah.
This is for storage. All right, we better wrap this episode up. So here's what I'd like you to do, my friends. Go to rateourpodcast.com. Give us an honest rating. We need that as a way to further expand exposure to the show. And we'd love for you to subscribe. Also, email me, askmike@mikemichalowicz.com, and we'll try to answer any questions you have on a future Mike Up in Your Business. Okay.
Can I add something?
Yes.
If you want to get more information on Zach, it's Westwind.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, westwindrecovery.com. And when I talk to Zach, just for anyone who's going through any type of like issues, if you're experiencing this, you personally, he said the best thing you can do is reach out to family members, talk to people, let them know how you're feeling. Try and seek some help for that.
Yeah. Jeremy, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, it's absolutely critical. Westwindrecovery.com. All right, let's get out of here. Wishing you
good times.
See you guys.
Bye.